just a special time this evening for Live with the Infidel Guy, or shall I say that is this evening right now in the UK. Welcome everyone, one and all, to the Infidel Guy Show at infidelguy.com. Right now we have everybody being redirected from infidelguy.com to freethoughtmedia.com. This is the official released party, so to speak, for freethoughtmedia.com, our newest network of broadcasters, freethought broadcasters all around the country. And the world, of course. Well, about time, took us a little bit. Phone company's giving me problems. But we finally got through. And hopefully we'll have him for an hour. We'll see. Richard Dawkins is a little under the weather today. But we shall see what happens. In fact, I'm a little stuffy myself. I guess it's that time of year. Of course, the intro song is by Hydrazine, by member Waffles at infidelguy.com. You can call in toll free. The number is 888-503-0802. And I'll be in the Infidel Guy chat room. So join us in there. Well, today you guys have been asking to have this gentleman on for quite some time now. And I know I met Richard at in Tampa, actually. I spoke about why there are good reasons to disbelieve. And we all sat at the table, and Richard told me then, he says, hey, I'd love to appear on your program. And 3 years later, finally, not his fault, just very busy, finally, we got him right here at infidelguy.com. Many of you know who Richard Dawkins is, and I'll let him introduce himself a little bit more if he needs to, but I'll tell you a little bit. He's a noted author and famous zoologist, and he's appearing today to talk to us about science, evolution, fun biology facts. You know, we can't get enough of those. And also the current design movement, intelligent design movement, going on in the United States, as well as how this compares to other countries. Dawkins is the author of several hit books, including The Blind Watchmaker, and his more recent, The Ancestor's Tale. And, of course, you can purchase them both at Amazon.com. Welcome to the program. Glad we finally got you on the line, Richard Dawkins.
Thank you very much.
It's about time we got you on here.
Yes. Well, I'm sorry, I've got a cold.
Yes, that's okay.
I'll do my best anyway.
Okay, well, that's no problem. Okay, well, I guess maybe you can give us a little bit about, well, there's so much you're doing right now, actually. I recently contacted you as a result of watching the documentary you narrated.
Where did you get hold of that, by the way? Did I send it to you, or did you get that on a download?
I got that on a download, yes.
Okay.
Someone sent it to me. Actually, I first found out about it from someone in your neck of the woods, actually.
Right.
And they sent it my direction.
Good.
It was pretty awesome. Now how many parts do you expect of this program? Is it just two, or are there more coming?
Just two, I'm afraid. They are talking about possibly doing something else later, but this was a two-parter.
Oh, okay. Wow, that's great. You won't find hardly anything like that over here, unfortunately.
Well, we've got to change that, haven't we?
Yes.
I think it's because people are afraid that advertisers will not wish to put their commercials on.
Right.
And I've never quite understood that, because it seems to me to be pandering to a sort of lowest common denominator.
That's right.
Surely for every religious person who switches off because they're offended, there'll be somebody else who switches on because they're not. I mean, it's not as though the non-believing citizenry of America doesn't exist. They're actually extremely numerous. It's just that nobody seems to realize it. If you actually count up the number of Americans who don't believe in any kind of supernatural being, it is very large. And I think that you guys all need to get together and realize that you're much more numerous than many people think you are.
Right. To start contacting these, these production companies, letting them know, we want to see this stuff.
Exactly.
We want to hear this stuff. There's no doubt about it. Now, the program we're talking about, people are inquiring, we're talking about, it's called The Root of All Evil, correct? With a question mark.
With a question mark.
Right. So do
the
you believe...
The question mark was a concession I rang out of them. I didn't want that title, Root of All Evil.
Really?
And they insisted on that. And so the question mark was the concession. I would actually rather have had either The God Delusion, which is the title of the book that I'm now working on, or a quote from John Lennon, something like, imagine a world without religion, or imagine no religion. But they were hell-bent on Root of All Evil, so we had to go along with it.
Now, why do you think that is, even in a much more Well, many people seem to believe that in your neck of the woods in the UK there, that they're more progressive as far as the media is concerned. Why would they be concerned about such a title? Why not just leave it the way you... Leave it with your suggestion?
They wanted the title to be as controversial as possible. I mean, they wanted to offend people.
Hmm.
And because they thought it would cause a great buzz of conversation and discussion, which is... I mean, that's the way television people think. At least they do over here. It kind of succeeded. I mean, most of the criticism that I got was, in a way, inflamed by that title.
Hmm.
Which was a bit unfortunate.
Right. Well, I guess it would have been much worse if you had entitled it something else, huh?
No.
No, you don't think so?
The title that I had wanted was a more, well... I guess, no, maybe not. I mean, my John Lennon title, Imagine a World Without Religion, I suppose that's fairly strong. I mean, I objected to Root of All Evil because no one thing is the root of all anything. I mean, religion is not the root of all evil, it's just the root of, well, most evil.
Oh, okay. Huh, that's intriguing. So how do you feel, then, about religion in general, then? I once heard someone say that... we need to really just get rid of all religion. We like to believe that some people can keep religion and stay and be civilized and just keep their personal beliefs to themselves. But it seems like regardless, whenever we continue to allow religious belief systems, inevitably we're going to have some fundamentalism grow out of this.
Well, I think that's right. I think it's because we're all brought up to respect faith.
Right.
And faith means believing something without evidence, without having to give your reasons for belief. Once you buy into that, even if you yourself are moderate, you are licensing the world for people to throw their weight around in a very violent way, because if they're not called to account, if they don't have to justify their beliefs, they simply say, well, that's what I believe because I believe it because I have faith,
right?
Then there is really no answer to that. And if somebody says, well, my faith tells me that I'm going to behead some Danish newspaper cartoonist because he draws a cartoon or something. You can't argue somebody out of that if we've all bought into the idea that faith is something we have to respect. And that's the fundamental evil that I think religion is based upon.
Right. I've noticed that, especially in my community. For some reason, they use the word faith as if it's some absolute firm foundation, a grounding, something that is... You know, you're not even supposed to, it's beyond, reproach that. It's,
exactly. And we've all been brought up to believe that. We've all been brought up to respect that. And weirdly, even people who are not religious have been brought up to respect the beliefs of people who are. You can respect somebody because of the evidence that they give, if they produce a good argument, but why should you respect something because he simply says, I have faith that
exactly.
this is true?
Exactly. 888-503-0802. You're listening to The Infidel Guy. We have Richard Dawkins on the program with us. Many of you might have, if you downloaded the program, you probably saw him on The Root of All Evil, and we have a couple of other and well-known books out there about defending evolution. Now, wow, we have a lot of questions already happening in the chat room. Let's see if they're related here. Yes, we do. Costa has an interesting question here in the chat room here. He's asking, what are the best arguments to convince other non-believers of all types to be more openly critical or questioning of other dogmatic religious beliefs?
Well, I suppose one good argument is to point out that different religious beliefs are incompatible with each other, and you'll find that that religions are, that the more fundamentalist they are, the more radical the religions are, the more they criticize each other, the more they attack each other. And they can't all be right. At most, only one of them can be right. And remember that there are also lots of other religious beliefs that people used to believe, like believing in Thor and Apollo and Zeus and Mithras and things that nobody believes anymore. There's an infinite number of things that people could believe, and there's no particular reason to believe in any of them. So I think that would be one point to make. Another point to make would be that, as I said earlier, the number of people who actually don't believe is much greater than most people think. And I think that the atheist community needs to get organized in the way that, for example, the Jewish community is, because actually the number of people who are religious Jews is much smaller than the number of people who don't believe in any sort of supernatural God. But you'd never know it if you look at the influence that the Jewish lobby has as compared to the, well, I'd say atheist lobby. There really isn't an atheist lobby.
Right.
We just haven't got our act together, although we could be very, very powerful.
Right, right.
If we did get our act together.
Hmm.
So that's another thing that I would make. Finally, I think I would say, if you actually ask people for the reason why they believe in any sort of supernatural God, apart from faith or apart from just the fact that they've been brought up to believe it, if you actually ask what is the evidence for some kind of supernatural being, there isn't any.
Right.
I mean, it really is pathetic how little evidence there is for this belief that people hold with absolutely unshakable confidence.
Hmm. Well, we have a first caller here. Let's take this call. Hello, you're on the air with Richard Dawkins.
Oh, hi, Reggie, and hi, Richard.
Hello.
Hey, well, I'm sorry, I just joined, so I haven't heard much in the way of what you've already been bringing out. I wanted to ask what your thoughts were on the ideas of evolution being reducible to systems theory, for lack of a better word, looking at, like, examples of Terra and Polyworld, the computer simulations of evolution that were, you know, pretty intriguing. Do you have any comments on that?
Well, that is a very interesting field. It is to be expected that any general principle as powerful as Darwinian evolution should be simulatable in a computer, and there have been a fair number of computer models which have duplicated various aspects of the evolutionary process, never the whole thing. I mean, the whole thing is extremely complicated and large scale and took a very long time. So models can only ever hope to duplicate some small part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But those small parts that have been duplicated can be very illuminating, and I think it's a good, fruitful line of inquiry, mm-hmm. which I applaud.
Interesting. Yes, I've seen those illustrations on television and whatnot about how this can occur. But yeah, there's so many, anomalies, and there are so many other things we just would not consider that could occur that could affect the evolution of an organism. So, but yeah, but even with all these variables that we don't know of, you're saying that even those models still show us a lot of promise, even though they're...
Yes. Yeah. And one thing is that when people express skepticism that evolution could possibly produce the results that it does produce,
mm-hmm.
computer models can be very good at breaking down that skepticism, because although they can't duplicate the entire process, I mean, you can't evolve a human being or a kangaroo or something from scratch in a computer.
Right.
Nevertheless, you can take particular objections to the evolution idea and show, well, this objection is nonsense, because here is this computer model which actually shows it working before your eyes.
Hmm. You have anything else for us, caller?
Sorry, didn't hear that.
I'm sorry, what?
You have anything else for us, caller?
No, that was just it. It's just something that's been on my mind because it's been a useful thing to approach people who have kind of an emotional objection to
right.
the evolution. So,
okay.
All right, well, thanks for your input.
Thank you. Bye. Again, ladies and gentlemen, the number is 888-503-0802. Yeah, we don't have a lot of time, Richard, so we're probably going to be jumping everywhere. There's not going to be much format to this, so to speak. It would take a lot of callers, and we'll just ask you questions as we get them, I guess. I noticed there's one thing, one particular aspect of the documentary that, The Root of All Evil, was your conversation with the Muslim, the Islamic little thing. I mean, he was fanatic, no doubt about it. He was a fanatic.
Yes.
And it's odd. Even though I'm watching this, and it's all said and done, I was afraid for you. How did you feel? I wondered, were you a little frightened by this man? Were you afraid he was going to pick up the phone and call some guys to take you out? What was on your mind?
I was never afraid that I would actually be physically harmed.
Really?
I was alarmed that... Well, for one thing, except when the camera was running and when we were talking about such matters, he was a perfectly nice guy. I mean, we talked about ordinary things in a very amicable, friendly way, and both before and after the meeting. So it was kind of a little bit of a staged, I mean, on his part, it wasn't staged on mine. He was a religious fanatic, no question about that, but he never struck me as the kind of person who would actually get physically violent. And also, I mean, I had a whole television crew with me who would have been able to look after me, I think. So no, I wasn't afraid of that, but I was afraid for what he was showing me about what the sort of perversion that it's possible to exist in a human mind once it becomes infected with this sort of religious fanaticism. Because I was aware that there were plenty others like him. And, I mean, he was an articulate one. He happened to be English-speaking because he was originally American, and so he was a good person to talk to. The other reason we chose to speak to him is that he had been brought up a Jew.
Right.
And therefore, naively, we thought he might be, have been able to see both points of view and how wrong we were.
Amazing how people just accept things without evidence. I mean, that's just crazy. And I guess maybe he was even putting on a little bit for the cameras, possibly, too.
I think he genuinely is filled with hate.
So you do believe that, though? Wow.
I think he's filled with hate for Jews, and I think he's filled with hate for women, women who are free and not under the thumb of men all the time. I mean, he really does have big hang-ups about... He kept on telling me, why don't you tell your women to dress properly and things? And I had to reply that it's not my business to tell women how to dress. And they're not my women anyway.
Yes. Yes, I noticed that. And I noticed that there was a... you made a lot of responses as well to a lot of his comments, but unfortunately they got cut out, I guess, for editing's sake. But there was a lot more that you really wanted to get out, but you couldn't.
Indeed so. And that was true of all the interviews. I mean, when you make a television documentary of that kind,
yes,
the interviews tend to get cut down to less than a tenth, I suppose, of the original.
Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would please, it looks like we're having so many people listening right now to the feed. If you would please help other people listen by dropping down to the 24K feed. It's a much less quality feed, but it's still very acceptable for what we're doing right now, which is mostly just talking. So please drop down to a lower bit rate. We have people in the chat room who can give you the proper links if you don't know where it is. Okay, please do that. That'll help us have more listeners, and we'll have less rebuffering on the feed. We have another caller in. I almost forgot about you. Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, Richard Dawkins.
Hello.
I'm Samuel, and I was wondering what has to be done for evolution to be considered a fact rather than a theory?
There's a philosophical issue about what's meant by a theory and what's meant by a fact. And if you listen to some philosophers of science, they will tell you that absolutely nothing is really a fact. Everything is a theory which has not yet been disproved. But there's a kind of reasonableness that has to creep in here. It's only a theory that the Earth is round and that the Earth spins on its axis, which is why we have day and night, and the Earth goes round the sun, which is why we have summer and winter. That is only a theory. It's a theory that has never been disproved. It's a theory that everybody knows will never be disproved. And so that's what we ordinarily, in everyday speech, mean by a fact. Now, evolution is a theory in that technical sense. But in the common sense, evolution is a fact. Evolution is a fact. I repeat for the third time, evolution is a fact in the same sense as any other fact which we believe because we see it with the evidence of our own eyes.
Right.
Admittedly, we don't actually see evolution happening before our eyes most of the time. But that's a trivial point because we see the after effects. We're like a detective who comes upon the scene of a crime after the crime. We haven't actually seen the dagger plunging into the victim. But what we have seen is a thousand, a million, a billion pieces of evidence, all of which point to exactly the scenario that we know happened. Evolution is a fact.
Okay, let's take a sec. Next call. Hello.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
You're on the air with Richard Dawkins.
Turn
your volume down, please, on your computer.
Okay, sorry. Sorry about that.
It happens.
I just wanted to ask him about...
I'm sorry, can you turn your volume down on your computer, please? I still hear it in the background.
I'm trying to turn it down right now. Turn your volume down. There, it's off.
There you go.
Okay. My question, Richard, has to do with the Democrats are being complained about because they don't have a platform or anything to fight for. And I'm looking, are we as atheists basically just trying to get people to get away from God and go to reason alone, or do we have any guidance in terms of... developing a secular ethics that seems to make sense reasonably, and that's kind of the issues that I've been trying to get some answers to.
I obviously, since I don't live in America, not an American citizen, would hesitate to comment on details of American politics. However, you are talking about ethics, and so I do think that secular ethics, they are extremely well developed. There is a well developed subject of moral philosophy which has been going for centuries, which owes nothing to religion, or certainly doesn't necessarily owe anything to religion. And so those political issues which one could think of as being ethical, especially those affecting science, which interest me, like stem cell research and so on, you can come up with a very coherent and well-argued and religion-free set of rules. It sounds as though that's the business you're in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
How you sell that politically is another matter, and I mean, I sort of perhaps naively tend to put my faith in argument and the belief that people will actually listen to argument if you put the argument well and clearly. I think we saw a brilliant example of that in the court case presided over by Judge John Jones in Pennsylvania, where
mm-hmm.
people thought, well, he's been appointed by Republicans, he is a Republican, he's a Christian. They might have expected that he would have fallen for the nonsense of intelligent design. Magnificently, he didn't. He came through with flying colors
right.
as a reasonable, critical man who was able to listen to arguments.
Mm-hmm.
He coined a wonderful phrase. What was that phrase he said? A breathtaking inanity. And recognizing that they were telling lies and that
wow.
kind of thing.
Right. When
they tried to make out that intelligent design was something more than just old-fashioned creationism.
Mm.
Intelligent design is just old-fashioned creationism and nothing more. Judge John Jones saw right through them. Now, that seems to me to be a shining beacon of hope, because if somebody like that, a Republican, a Christian, appointed by Bush, could be swayed by reasonable argument, reasonable, patient, well-argued case, then there's hope for the country, and maybe we just need to get our arguments out there, and people may then listen and take note.
I agree. What do you think about the recent cartoon controversy with the depiction of Prophet Muhammad in a bomb and all these other images?
The thing that really shocks me about that is the way the Islamic world blames not just the cartoonist himself. God, I wouldn't blame him either, or the cartoonists, since there were 12 different ones. It's the way they seem to think that not just the whole Danish people is to blame,
mm-hmm.
but everybody in the West is to blame.
Right.
We had absolutely nothing whatever to do with it. I mean, that's an astonishingly warped perception of the way things happen in the world. I am not responsible for those Danish cartoons. You are not responsible for those Danish cartoons. The average Danish man or woman in the street of Copenhagen is not responsible for those cartoons. And yet, any Dane going to a Muslim country is today in danger. That is barbarian and uncivilized.
Mm. And yet, it's like, I don't understand why they cannot see the, you know, the hypocrisy or the contradiction when they say Islam is a religion of peace, and then they turn
absolutely
right
magnificent. Here. You see, there was one sign that said, behead all those who deny that Islam is a religion of peace, or behead those who say that Islam is a religion of violence.
Right,
I mean, it
right.
just is so funny when you think about it.
and sad, right, funny and
yeah.
sad. Like, how can you not see that that's a problem?
Yeah.
It really makes you wonder about either, I don't know, education? Do they need classes in
yeah.
logic? What's the issue here?
I mean, after all we're talking about is drawings, for goodness sake. We're not talking about anybody actually
right.
getting hurt.
Right.
I mean, that's one of the fatuous things about religion, is that they will take a mere drawing, just a drawing, and elevate that
right.
above human life.
Right. And does even, and it's like, right, it's a cartoon, so therefore it's not even a likeness of the person. Does anyone even know what he even looks like? I mean, for goodness sakes, you know, like, it's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah.
Now we have another call here. Hello? You're on the air.
Am I on?
You're on.
Am I on? Okay. I wanted to ask Mr. Dawkins if he thinks that the intelligent design movement in Europe is getting a foothold, and should I be worried? Because, as he knows, it is spreading in Great Britain and the rest of Europe.
Well, you were very faint, but I think I heard you to ask whether the intelligent design movement is spreading in in Europe.
Yes.
I'm not sure about continental Europe. In Britain, no, I wouldn't say it's spreading. I mean, there are an awful lot of people who if you take a Gallup poll and say, there is this scientific controversy between evolution on the one hand and this new theory called intelligent design on the other. Do you think the controversy should be taught? Well, of course people are going to answer yes if you say that, because you've just told them, you've set up the question, as there is this exciting new theory called intelligent design. So obviously, of course they want to hear about it. Secondly, you said, should the controversy be taught? That presupposes that there is a controversy. Who's going to say, no, we shouldn't teach the controversy? Well, if you phrased it differently,
right,
instead of presupposing that there is a controversy, mm-hmm, instead of presupposing that there is an exciting new theory called intelligent design,
right,
if you told them the facts, which is that there is absolutely nothing new about intelligent design, it is precisely the same as the old creationist theory that predated Darwin, that Darwin argued against, that Darwin disposed of. There is no controversy within science. There is a controversy out there in the popular mind, and it's certainly probably a good idea to teach people about the existence of anything that's controversial in the popular mind. But it is not a scientific controversy, and it should not be taught in science class any more than we should teach the phlogiston theory or the stalk theory of where babies come from.
You know, Richard, in the religious mind, of course, when they hear you say something like that, evolution is a fact, and we need to say it that way. Well, as you know, they've been saying that their religion is a fact for centuries. So so if we accuse them of being dogmatic and close-minded, they'll say the same of us. Why is that not the same thing?
And the difference is that what I say is based upon evidence. You don't have to take my word for it. You don't have to say, oh, because he says it's a fact, it's a fact. For goodness sake, don't ever believe that. Go and look in the, go to the library, look up the books. Look up the evidence. You'll find stacks and stacks and stacks and stacks of evidence. Mm-hmm. Don't take my word for it, and don't take their word for it.
And the cool thing is, if the tools are available, one can do their own experiments as well.
Yes.
You know, and not just read, because that's another rebuttal too. Well, the Bible's a book too, and you reject that, but we can still do our own research as well, though.
Even if you can't do your, of course you can in some respects, but even if you couldn't, there's this great body of people who are doing the research. I mean, I don't do physics experiments. I don't understand physics enough to be able to say why I believe what Einstein said, for example, why I believe that the speed of light is 186,000 miles per second. In a sense, I have to take that on trust, but I'm not taking on trust just the unaided word of one physicist. There's a whole body of physicists whom I know are out there beavering away doing experiments, doing theory. There's a vast edifice of science going on, which I don't understand all the details of. I only understand the details of evolution, and there are other people to understand the details of physics. You can't expect to take in all the details, so we do have to take some things on trust. But if you actually burrow down into the depths of science, you'll find an awful lot of evidence going on there. If you burrow down into the depths of biblical knowledge, what have you got? You've got an ancient, or not that ancient, a fairly old document dating back to a few hundred years BC. And if you ask who wrote it, when was it written, there is absolutely no good evidence to believe that what is written down on those scrolls and parchments has any validity whatever.
That is so true. It's 1:49 p.m., ladies and gentlemen. We will be going to, if Richard can last with us, and I think he's enjoying himself, so maybe he'll stay with us if he can. He's a little ill today.
My cold seems to be going a bit better.
Okay, good. We'll try to go to 2:17, so that way we can get a full hour out of the program. As you know, we started later because we did have some technical problems. We did, and the phone company did. Couldn't get through, but we finally have now. And don't forget, the number is 888-503-0802. In fact, I have someone holding. If I don't, by the way, I'm scrolled down to the bottom of the chat room, so if you posted something and I haven't gotten to it yet, I probably won't. So either repost it or try to call into the number. We have a caller right now. Hello. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Hi. Hi, Richard.
Hello.
Earlier, you just mentioned the Bible. We don't know who wrote it. Actually, a couple nights ago, I watched a documentary produced for Channel 4 called Who Wrote the Bible, and I'd urge anyone listening to seek that out. It was pretty good.
Good stuff.
But the reason why I'm calling is because I have a little philosophical argument that I've come up with, and I was wondering what you thought. So it appears as though an omniscient, omnipotent entity cannot exist at this time, because such an entity would encompass everything, even ourselves, it would have to. But since you and I both have limits and we are not omniscient, is it possible for a limitless entity that encompasses everything to have a part of itself, you and I, that are limited from accessing limitless powers and resources? It doesn't seem intuitively so, so therefore I would tend to conclude that at this time this cannot exist. But what I want to know from you is if in the future you think that we could possibly create a god through technology, sort of what the transhumanist movements and extropian movements are moving towards.
I'm not sure whether I got to your logical argument any more than I necessarily get the arguments of theologians. But to your other point, might we create a god? I mean, I think that's a very interesting point, because I suspect that, yes, we probably could, but it would not be a supernatural god. It would be a god only defined in the sense that it was much, much greater and grander than anything we could imagine, and therefore we might therefore worship it. I also think that there probably is such a being, probably lots of them out there in outer space, because there are so many planets and so many opportunities for evolution to have got going,
right,
that I'd be very surprised if there was not somewhere out there a form of life that had evolved, which was so much more advanced than us, so much cleverer than us, so much more knowledgeable than us, that were we ever to meet it, we would fall on our knees and worship it. But notice that that is very, very different from saying that we have a supernatural being that has always existed and that created the universe. I'm now talking about beings which are not supernatural, merely very, very advanced, superhuman,
right,
not supernatural,
right,
but which have evolved by the same kind of gradual, step-by-step crane, as Dan Dennett has called it, process from simple beginnings. There's almost no limit to the grandeur and the complexity and the elegance of what can evolve by step-by-step degrees once the Darwinian process of natural selection gets going. And we are probably just nursery slopes compared with what can be produced by evolution. So I've absolutely no objection to the idea that there might be superhuman beings far grander than any god that any religion has ever imagined. But they would not be gods in the sense of being something supernatural which had always existed before the universe came into being. They would be evolved beings, evolved by, if not the same process of natural selection as gave rise to us, at least another process of step-by-step incremental improvement, like natural selection.
All right, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate that. All right. You know, it's funny, I always said that, you know, religion is everything we are and everything we are not, and God, or I said that God is everything we are and everything we are not, and the way we view God is pretty much, you know, we've made him everything that we wish to be, so that's kind of what that really is. Like, as some people joke and call God like the great granddaddy in the sky or the great father in the sky, well, that's why he's referred to as such in some way.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you define God as sort of everything, then it becomes just rather meaningless.
It does.
It's certainly not the kind of thing that you would want to worship or that you want to pray to or that would forgive your sins or anything like that.
Exactly, right. When people say that, you know, God is everything, what does that mean? So is God me as well? Yeah. Well, not exactly.
Yeah,
well,
it doesn't mean anything.
Okay, so we have another caller here, but standby caller. We're going to take care of you in a second. Some people in the chat room, they want to get to some fun biology facts. Basically, what are some of those fun biological facts that maybe most people simply don't know that support evolution?
There are plenty of fun biological facts, obviously, but I'm not sure about support it. I mean, there is no fact that doesn't support it. And the very existence of complicated biological entities which work, which do something useful, which see, or that walk, or that fly, or that hear, or that pump blood, these are machines such as any engineer would recognize as looking as though they had been beautifully designed. And, of course, that all supports the evolution. You could ask the question hypothetically, what would not support it or what would go against it?
Right.
And you might say a fossil that turned up in the wrong place.
Mm-hmm.
J.B.S. Haldane, when asked what would disprove evolution, said fossil rabbits in the Precambrian.
Wow.
And it's a very significant fact that no such fossils have ever been found. No, not just no rabbits in the Precambrian, but no anachronistic fossils of that kind, fossils
right.
that are out of sequence, except in obvious places where, say, a whole chunk of rock has got turned upside down.
Of course.
In this case,
right.
The fossils just come in reverse order.
Right, right. I've noticed that. Those seem to be a constant argument from a lot of creationist propaganda I read, in which they always refer to these extraordinary circumstances, which you mentioned. Some rock cliff might have fallen off and then buried later.
Happen. I mean, in some cases, they're just lies and rumors. There are rumors like a human skull found in the coal measures of the Carboniferous,
mm-hmm.
Which is either a lie or some unfortunate miner who died in recent times, and his skull turned up in the coal measures. I once spent a rather happy time in Texas studying the dinosaur footprints on the Paluxy Riverbed, which have given rise to a local legend, because there are said to be human footprints interspersed with the dinosaur footprints. If
mm-hmm.
that were true, then that would blow evolution out of the water. It isn't true, of course.
Mm-hmm.
What those alleged human footprints are is dinosaur heel prints, which just look, they look like human feet, but they're just kind of vaguely long-shaped in a way that human feet might be. A whole local cottage industry grew up around the town of Glen Rose in Texas, of local, rather enterprising people carving human footprints into the rock and things in order to uphold this lucrative little local legend, because creationists came from all over the country to see this wonder.
Okay. All right, we'll get back to more fun facts here in a second. Let's take this call here. Hello, you on the air?
Hi.
Hi.
There was recently an intelligent design and evolution debate at my school here in Gary, Indiana.
Okay.
And one of the things that dawned on me during the course of this debate was that the intelligent design proponent, as it were, wasn't apparently talking to the science people in the audience, but rather a small portion of the audience. And surprisingly, there were a few Richard Dawkins jokes coming from this this debater.
Do you remember his name?
I was just wondering, I can't remember, but he's from Moody Bible Institute.
Oh, my God. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting to see the blend coming from the Midwest here. But my question is, how can we sort of protect that small percentage of impressionable people from these sort of swindlers?
Wow, good question.
It's very difficult, isn't it? Because anybody who comes on and spouts a lot of long words, it's very easy to fool people like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, obviously, they could fool people in any field. You could have people coming on and spouting words about physics or words about astronomy or words about music or anything you like. I mean, if I don't know anything about a subject, then I'm vulnerable to being fooled by charlatans. And it just so happens that biology is in the front line, because people are not, on the whole, out to spread a lot of lies about physics or chemistry. They seem to leave that alone.
Mm-hmm.
But biology, because of evolution, is in the front line. And so there is an awful lot of misinformation being deliberately put about, and I can only, you know, try to counter it by writing the books that I do. I don't, on the whole, think that having one-on-one debates with these people is very helpful.
Really?
And I could be wrong about that. I mean, that's the line that I've always taken.
Mm-hmm.
I was advised to do that by the late Stephen Jay Gould, who said that what these people really want is to be seen to be having a debate with a real scientist. It doesn't matter if they win the debate or lose the debate. They've, in effect, won the moment the real scientist has agreed to go on a platform with them. and debate on equal terms.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've agreed to go on and debate on equal terms, you've, as it were, conceded there is a real controversy here.
Mm-hmm.
So when a scientist says, look, we don't need to teach intelligent design because there is no controversy, there's no controversy here, they can say, mm-hmm. oh, but there must be a controversy because I had a debate last week with Professor so-and-so, and he agreed to go on the platform with me, and he's a real scientist. So there must be a debate, mustn't there? And that sounds persuasive.
But
that's the kind of reason why I won't do one-on-one debates
right.
with those people.
You know, and I could probably understand that and see that, especially, you know, maybe in Europe. But over here, what if, and it appears to be, there's an opposite scenario here. What we have are the religiousness dominating everything. So it's actually the other way around. They're saying that, you see what I'm saying? So they're saying that we know that creationism is real. So now we have to debate them in order to show them that there is a controversy.
I know. I don't know what to say about that. It's a genuinely difficult, it's a political point in a way. It's a matter of political tactics. And
right.
so far I've been kind of holding the line for the Gould policy on that.
Right.
But there are others who don't, and I respect them for it. I mean, one is Kenneth Miller of Brown University.
Right, a Catholic.
Well, he is a religious man,
yes.
which in a way gives him greater street cred among these people, because he can actually say that he believes in God. He can say that he believes that intelligent design is an insult to God, that it's a blasphemy to God,
right.
because it suggests that God, instead of setting up the laws of the universe in such a grand way that everything would then play out,
right, right.
God had to come down and kind of interfere and mess about in a little ad hoc
mm-hmm.
way
right.
with his laws. So they're not magnificent laws after all. So he sees that as demeaning to God and a kind of insult or a blasphemy to God. But quite apart from that, he also gives the scientific arguments really very well. And he does debate and does it very well too. The late John Maynard Smith in Britain occasionally did it. And would win, and that was a very good thing. And I don't know whether he had the damaging effect
right.
of giving cachet to them by suggesting that there really is a controversy.
You know, yeah, Dr. Massimo Pigliucci is a really good, I don't know if you heard him speak, he's a pretty good debater as well, defending...
Say the name again?
Dr. Massimo Pigliucci?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Yes, he's pretty good as well.
Yeah.
And... you mentioned Stephen Jay Gould earlier. What is your view on punctuated equilibrium?
It's a controversy within science, within evolutionary science, and it's important to make the point that science is not a monolithic subject. There is controversy, there is disagreement, there's genuine disagreement, which arises really because the evidence is incomplete. And so as long as the evidence is incomplete, then there will be controversy and different differences of interpretation,
mm-hmm.
and so that's a very good example of it. So my attitude is that he oversold it as revolutionary. I don't think it was ever as revolutionary as he made out.
Mm-hmm.
It is an interesting question, an empirical question, to be settled by real evidence in the real fossil record, and it doesn't in any way impugn the fundamental truth of Darwinian evolution, as of course
right.
Steve Gould himself would have been the first to agree with.
Right. Basically, when we're talking about punctuated equilibria here, we're basically talking about evolution in fast, short spurts over time?
Yes,
versus...
I mean, there are various different versions of it.
His
observation, the observation that Eldridge and he started out from, is that there do appear to be jumps or gaps in the fossil record.
Okay.
And Darwin had interpreted these as being because of the incompleteness of the fossil record, and they were trying to interpret it as something more real, suggesting that evolution does go in extremely fast bursts and then stops, so that there's stasis, so-called, for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and then another little burst of evolution. It was never agreed among advocates of punctuated equilibrium what the jerkiness of evolution was about. I mean, some felt that it was due to macromutation, that's single large mutations. Others felt that it was just ordinary evolution speeded up.
Right.
And others felt that it was ordinary evolution but going on somewhere else, because evolution doesn't have to go on, evolutionary change in any one lineage doesn't have to go on in the place where you happen to be digging for fossils. It could be that the fossils were living in the place where you're digging. and then the species went off somewhere else, or speciated, formed a new species on an island somewhere else. So if you really wanted to get the continuity, you'd have to keep hopping around the world. And on the whole, that's not what paleontologists do, or maybe they can't do it because the fossils just aren't there. For Eldridge and Gould, they didn't, in a sense, really care very much what was actually going on to produce this apparent jerkiness. They were more keen to emphasize that evolution was jerky, was jumpy.
Yeah.
I think it's an interesting empirical question. You get a different answer with some kinds of animals than with other kinds of animals. And not a big issue, not a big deal.
Yeah, I've heard some utilize that Gould's idea with supporting the theory of animals leaving the ark.
What's that?
That explains where all of our species come from. Is after the story of Noah's Ark, all the animals. Because how do you explain all the diversity of life forms if the story of Noah's Ark is true? And I've heard people actually say that, oh, well, Stephen Jay Gould solved that with punctuated equilibria, see,
oh,
therefore.
Right.
No.
Do you know, by the way, how they explain why animals with bigger brains tend to appear more higher up in the fossil record than animals with smaller brains?
No. What have they said about
that? It's because at the time of Noah's Ark, all the animals were struggling to get out of the water, so they took to the hills, and the cleverest ones were the ones who got highest up the hills before the floods got them.
Oh, so
that's why they're deeply spread out in this way.
Oh, interesting. So now they try to adopt at least some evolutionary concepts to benefit
them.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, it's pretty weird.
Yes. I mean, we laugh at that. That is, of course, absurd. But it is worthwhile noting that that theory would predict a sort of correlation. But what it would not predict is that there shouldn't be a single fossil in the wrong place. Not a single brainy animal got drowned lower down the slopes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've asked Kent Hovind once. I said, how come we don't find human fossils mixed in with, like, you know, I don't know, coelenterates and some primitive life forms in a fossil record? He said, well, I'm sure we do. Where?
Yes.
I'm sure we will find some.
Yes, quite.
We have a call here. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hi. Thank you for
holding. Dr. Dawkins, big fan of yours for many years. Now, my question is actually not about, I guess, evolution per se, but more that when I read your first book back when I was a freshman in college, it was kind of eye-opening because before then, I had always been taught evolution as kind of like a survival of the fittest type thing, and then reading The Selfish Gene was the first time I actually saw it from like the gene's eye point of view. And so my question to you is that, how did you come to that? Was that kind of like a eureka moment, or did you just kind of formulate that, you know, that it's the genes are the ones driving?
It's not
good question.
It's not really totally different. It's just a different way of looking at it. So I wouldn't say it's a contradiction to the survival of the fittest. It's just that the survival of the fittest at the level of the individual organism has to be interpreted in terms of the survival of those individuals which are best at reproducing, which means best at propagating their genes. So you can express the selfish gene point of view at the level of the individual, provided you remember that what the individual is maximizing is its own reproduction, its number of children, its number of grandchildren, number of great-grandchildren, which means its genes. So you can rephrase the whole thing by jumping to the level of the genes, which is what I did, and say that the genes are using the individuals as temporary survival machines to ensure their own, the genes, survival. So it's just a different way of looking at the same thing. Now, you ask, was it a sudden eureka moment? Not really, because it wasn't new. It really goes back to the modern synthesis of the 1930s, and R.A. Fisher and J.B.S. Haldane and people like that. They didn't put it in quite the same way, but my feeling is that if you read them correctly, then you would come to something like a selfish gene point of view. I suppose what I did do was give it a rhetoric, give it a sort of poetic force, which they didn't do. But there was really nothing scientifically new in what I said. Mm-hmm. It was just a new way of expressing it.
Right. Yeah, speaking of rhetoric, you know, Carl Sagan is pretty good at doing that. Of course, we're talking about, you know, different types of science here. But do you think that's important that we do that type of discussion and debate as well, using rhetorical argumentation and...
And maybe even emotional arguments sometimes.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Carl Sagan, because he, of course, was superb at that. And I think it's important, because not just for persuading people of what's the case, which we need to do, but also of arousing people's sense of poetry.
Right.
Science is a magnificent source of poetic inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
When you contemplate, as Carl Sagan did, the size of the universe, the sheer distances involved, the fact that as you look out at the night sky, you are looking back in time, and every star you look at is separated from the other stars, not only by space, but by time. So if you're looking at one star, you're seeing it at the moment when the dinosaurs went extinct, for example. Look at another star, and you're seeing it at a moment before life even started on our planet. So that's the kind of thought which you could put in a boring, factual way, or you can put mm-hmm. it in a poetic way, as Carl Sagan did. And I think you can do the same thing for all of science, and it's what I try to do for biology. Mm. And I think in some ways that sort of rhetoric is as important for winning people over to appreciate science as just simply telling them what's the case.
That's right. That's right. A lot of people tend to also think that science is something that's just for the elite, and you know, they don't understand. It's
well, that would be a shame, too, and certainly there are aspects of, especially physics, especially quantum physics, which
right.
are extraordinarily hard to understand, but it's still worth having a try, and I have a try with physics. I can't understand very much of it, but I think it's well worth doing, and I feel that my life is enriched for the attempt.
Right. Okay, let's take this caller here. Thank you for holding. You've been very patient. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, this is the Hillbilly Atheist. I was calling because I want to know if there's any hope for reason, because I live in the Bible Belt, and I reason and argue and plead and show facts, and no matter what I do, it's like throwing mud at a brick wall. The people of faith just don't bend, and I'm almost to the point of thinking it's hopeless. They're not going to change their mind, no matter what.
Well, remember that they've all been brought up from the cradle to beware of people like you. They've been told Satan will come, and Satan will sound extremely reasonable.
Mm.
And the more reasonable he sounds, the more devilish he is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just Satan's tricks. And it's a beautifully immunized system. They are protected by this by rules such as that.
Right.
I think that if you were to actually point out to them that if you actually, for a start, ask them, is it true that you've been told that if somebody comes at you with highly reasonable arguments that sound as though they're showing that their religious beliefs are wrong, is it true you've been told that that'll be Satan talking? I mean, they may lie, or they may agree to it. But once they've agreed to it, couldn't you then say, well, does that give you any worries at all? I mean, suppose the arguments I was telling you really are right. Then how would you know? Wouldn't it be better to just listen to the arguments and see whether they're plausible, see whether they seem to be based on evidence, rather than just dismiss them because you've been told,
mm-hmm.
You've been warned against them? But I don't know. I mean, it's extraordinarily hard. I don't think you can win everybody around, but I think that there's a significant number of people who are on the fence, who perhaps just haven't thought about it very
mm-hmm.
much. And I've told the story before of how when I've done, well, phone-ins like this, except with a very different kind of audience. I mean, this audience is obviously highly intelligent, educated audience, but I've done phone-ins where I've had a fair number of religious people and people of a creationist persuasion phoning in America, and I have expected to get a sort of hostile response to them. But funnily enough, I tend not to get a hostile response. I tend to get a rather interested, curious response. And very often, the people who phoned in will say, gee, that's interesting. I didn't think of it like that.
Right.
And you sort of feel that you're really making progress, you're making headway. And I've had lots of letters from people who told me that very same thing, that they were brought up Bible-believing Christians until they read one of my books. And then they started to have second thoughts. And they thought, and they thought, and they thought, and maybe they then read something else. And then finally they realized it was a load of nonsense. And they wrote to me that their religious belief was a load of nonsense. And they wrote to me thanking me. And that's happened really quite a lot. So don't give up hope. I mean, I think you won't change all of them, but you may change some.
That's right. All right, thanks, Hillbilly. Appreciate that. Thanks for the call. Okay, we're running out of time here, but I'll try to get these questions in if we can really quickly here. Cheesy from the chat room is saying, well, I don't like the way he's wording that. Let me ask you. You're bright. You believe you're bright, right? You support the bright movement, correct?
I have been gone on record as doing so, yes.
Well, so he's asking, what do you think about the bright movement?
I'm interested in mimetic engineering, and so it's a nice idea to think, what if we plant a new meme and hope that it spreads through the memosphere?
Right.
And the model, of course, is gay, because the word gay, during my lifetime, has changed its meaning from being kind of happy and jolly to meaning homosexual.
Right.
And that's a fantastic achievement of mimetic engineering by somebody. I don't know whether it was planned or whether it just kind of happened by inadvertence, but it has happened. There's no question about it. And the Brights movement set out to do the same thing. I think that the word they chose is actually rather a good one. A lot of atheists object to it because they're frightened of being thought arrogant.
Exactly.
They're frightened that people will think they're saying that atheists really are more intelligent than religious people.
Yeah.
To which my attitude is, well, of course they are more intelligent than religious people. What are you so afraid of? Why be so deferential and respectful? Or at very least, let's go and look at the evidence. Let's actually gather some evidence, give some IQ tests to people of different religious faiths. Now, I'm very keen that research should be done, and I think it is being done. But what little research has been done does indeed support the contention that atheists are, on the whole, more intelligent, have higher IQs than religious people. Of course, not everybody. I mean, no, one never can make that sort of generalization. But of about 40 studies that have been looked at, the great majority of them, I think about 38 out of 42, showed the same effect that non-religious people tend to be more intelligent statistically, only statistically, than religious people, which, of course, is exactly what you and I would expect.
Okay. Ricky, I believe he's from your neck of the woods, is asking about, how do you rate the threat to reason of British New Ageism compared with American fundamentalism?
New Ageism is, I think, an American phenomenon as well as a British phenomenon. It is true that in Britain, as religion falls away, and church-going religion is now very, very low indeed, very, very few people now go to church in Britain, but it has been observed that what people put in its place is not atheism, but New Age nonsense, which is every bit as bad as religion. I mean, ley lines and things like that. So it's as though, I mean, people will quote those facts in evidence that the human mind needs to be mystified, that people have an urge for the mysterious, that they don't like things to be explained. And if you remove their traditional religion, they'll replace it with some other kind of obscurantist mystification.
Right.
I hope that's not true. I hope that people do have a genuine hunger for understanding. And traditionally, from medieval times, that hunger has been filled by religion. As it drops away, it's up to us, it's up to scientists and up to rationalists to try to jump in and fill that vacuum. And it looks as though maybe we're failing to do it in this country, to the extent that the vacuum is being filled by New Age nonsense instead of religious nonsense.
Okay. And lastly, I don't understand this person's question exactly, but he's asking, he's been asking forever, please ask Dr. Dawkins this. He says, do you believe in determinism? How does he ask this? Does Professor Dawkins believe in determinism?
Oh.
Then he says,
you can't ask me that. That's the very last question. I mean, it's a very profound philosophical question.
Yes.
But whatever I believe in it, it mm-hmm. doesn't bear one way or the other on anything that I might say as a biologist. It's a philosophical question, possibly a physicist question. It's not a biologist question. Nothing
right.
about biology or genetics alters the way you think about determinism one way or the other. If you are a determinist philosophically, then you'll stay a determinist philosophically after learning biology. And if you're not a determinist philosophically, you'll stay not a determinist after learning biology. Biology doesn't impinge upon it one way or the other.
Okay. Yeah, I think this pretty much goes into his, yeah, because he was wondering about rational thought. And, you know, some people think that maybe, you probably heard of, what's his name? Matthew Alper talks about the God part of the brain, and that maybe we just might be genetically inclined to be more religious versus...
Well, I think that's very, very likely true. I mean, after mm-hmm. all, religion is a human universal in the sense that every culture, every known culture has had something like religion. And those individuals in particular cultures who are not religious have departed knowingly and wantonly from something which they realize to be the norm for their society. So it is a universal. That suggests that there is something in the brain that predisposes us to it. It doesn't mean it predisposes us to God per se.
Right.
It could be that what we have is a genetic predisposition to be gullible, mm-hmm. be credulous,
right.
to believe what we're told uncritically. If that were what our brains were genetically programmed to be, then religion would automatically arise or as a kind of parasite of that gullibility.
Hmm. Kind of makes sense, like animals in nature in a way. I guess they don't have brains sophisticated enough to really critically analyze every single aspect of existence. They just pretty much react. They take what input they get, they assume it's accurate, and work off
yes.
that. Maybe we still kind of have that in us, which is why we have to think things through based on accumulative evidence. Sometimes.
Yes, so maybe we've got enough brains to rise above that, but not enough brains to go one stage further.
Right, I guess, yeah, life after death. Yeah, yeah, because we've also evolved that aspect as well as
yes.
Understanding our finality, our understanding
yes.
that we could end and we want to wish to persist. So, yes, we hold on to those things. Well, I'd like to thank you, Professor Dawkins, for coming on the program with us today and talking about many different things, you know, evolution and ID and much more. We need to have you back on. Maybe we can be more specific and talk just about particular aspects of evolution and so forth. I'd like to have you back.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much indeed.
All right. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Okay, well, ladies and gentlemen, I had to make a few announcements, which is why you don't hear the theme music playing, but I want to make a few announcements as well about freethoughtmedia.com. Right now what's happening is that InfidelGuy.com is being redirected to FreeThoughtMedia.com, which is now our new network in which we're going to have 24/7 hours of free thought broadcasting. And we're hoping this is going to be a huge success, but we need more broadcasters. We need a lot of support, a lot of financial support, too, so that we can move to a server, a more robust server that can actually take care of all the connections that we're getting. I got a feeling this is going to grow beyond leaps and bounds. I'm willing to help train anybody. If you're an expert in the realm of biology, all you need is a computer, and I'll be able to teach you how to broadcast with us here at freethoughtmedia.com. Well, I guess you need a sound card, too, sorry, but you need a sound card, and there will be some software that I'll need to help you out with. But I'm willing to walk you through that. So if you want to become a broadcaster at freethoughtmedia.com, let me know. You can contact me. My email address is infidelguy@infidelguy.com, okay? And, I mean, we're ready for you. We now have officially launched today. Richard Dawkins is going to pretty much our kickoff show. And I'm only redirecting infidelguy.com to freethoughtmedia.com just for one day. Maybe a little less, actually. But for one day, okay. But you can still access the forums at infidelguy.com and the Gold Member Download section. All right. You'll see that at the front page of Free Thought Media. Just scroll down a little bit. You'll see it in the welcome. All right. So I didn't forget about you. But I think it's important that we try to kickstart Free Thought Media. This has been a baby of mine. I've been thinking about trying to do such a project for many, many, many years and have never had the resources until today. And we can thank Gotcha for that. So Gotcha is the man. He's the one that made this all a possibility. And also FAC as well. All right. If you haven't met FAC, he's in the forums and also the chat room most of the time. FAC has been very instrumental in coding and just really editing and changing things to make sure we can make this all possible. So, and you can donate to us, and of course I'll be able to give back to the community when you donate. All right. I guess that's it as far as the announcement so far, I guess. Again, I'd like to thank Richard Dawkins for appearing on the program, and thank all of you for responding to the bulletins and emails and other websites and forums and newsletters and coming on out here today. I want to say today and tonight because I know that it's nighttime over there, or it's getting dark over there in the UK. But for everybody around the world who's tuning in and listening tonight, I hope we enjoyed having Dawkins appear. And again, in the future, hopefully we can talk about more particular topics. And I'm still mad at the phone company for messing up our connection earlier, which is why we had to go over past the hour a little bit. And I don't know what... I'm not doing any forum transfers, by the way, Craig. Someone's asking about how are we going to handle forum transfers. The forums are going to be completely different and distinct. At first, I was thinking about merging them, but not anymore. I think that Free Thought Media can support itself. Right now, I'm just trying to get you all to help out. You know, start conversations, start posting in science and philosophy. Just get it kickstarted for us. I really appreciate that because we're going to have a lot of people checking it out. And think of everywhere you've had posted. Wherever you have infidelguy.com posted, post Free Thought Media, because this is going to be, Free Thought Media is for everybody. Again, it's not just for atheists, it's not just for agnostics, it's Free Thought Media. So anybody who thinks you're a free thinker can listen and contribute. That's what it's all about. We even have one theist so far on the program. His name is Rob Revere. I think he makes a pretty bad theist, but even he's on the, no offense, Rob, but even he's on the program. And we have some other people who are also theists who are interested in broadcasting as well. So make sure you check it out. Well, I guess that's it for now. Stick to the forums at infidelguy.com and the new forums at freethoughtmedia.com. Spread the word. Again, I'm here to help you. If you want to become a broadcaster, I'll show you how to do it. Oh, the sex show last night. If you missed it, the sex show, I'll be processing that in a second, and I will get that up and available in the archives and also for free at freethoughtmedia.com. I think you'll love it. Oh, my gosh. The show was awesome. I'm still tingly. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, well, stay tuned. I'm going to upload that in a second. I'll see you all another time. Thanks for listening. In Reason.